Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Capital Assets Podcast, the intersection of personal finance, the economy, and business. I'm Gerard Simic, the chairman of Consumer Action for a Strong Economy.
I'm Cassie Panzenbeck, financial advisor at Raymond James.
Good morning, Cassie. It's been a very busy week, as usual, and I think you'd like to start us off with the, what do we call it?
We call it something different every week. So this week, let's go with the weekly rundown. One of these days, we'll settle on a name for my little segment.
Yeah, I need to have a contest or something. You didn't like any of the ones I suggested.
Well, it'll end up being called something like Weekly McWeekly Rundown or something. You know, it won't get any good name. Update McUpdate.
Money markets and mayhem.
Well, I hope not too much mayhem. In fact, the last weeks we've been looking at really fun, strong results in the market. In fact, the S&P 500 closed at a record high every day last week. And the last time that happened was in 2021. And if we look at the last 18 other times that that's happened since 1950, the S&P 500 ended up gaining about 10% on average and was positive 72% of the time over the next 12 months. So, hey, Cassie, you just threw out a lot of numbers. All we're saying is the market looks really strong right now. We've had fun results every day last week, getting to hit new record highs. And that doesn't mean that we're just on a cliff poised for a crash. It shows us that historically the market remains strong, even if in short-term periods there might be some small corrections. Mm-hmm. We've still got some great long-term strength in the market. So it was a really fun week last week. This week, still not seeing any major sell-offs happening. Yesterday, we had the close. We had record highs intraday, the close a little bit lower. But in the long run, the market's looking strong. It's looking great. And I know that clients are really enjoying looking at their statements right now.
What about our friends with NASDAQ and the Dow Jones? How are they doing?
NASDAQ also looking really strong. It's also notched record highs throughout all of last week. So NASDAQ just being... how do I describe that? Because it's not an index. It's a market. No, NASDAQ also looking strong. We talk about the NASDAQ when we're thinking about tech, because most of the securities trading on NASDAQ are tech names. So NASDAQ's looking strong. Tech is absolutely our leading industry. And in fact, it's going to be the theme of today's show.
Oh, good.
I hope that's not shocking to you, Jerry.
Theme shows always do really well. Well, there was a bit of a sell-off, a dip with the credit cards after the Genius Act. There was some concern that the swipe fees might get hit with businesses having their own stable coins. But it's they rebounded, but the credit cards, Visa and MasterCard, are actually leaning into the stable coins and developing their own. We have some exciting news with the potential merger of Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern. It's going to get us our first Transcontinental Railroad after all these years.
So the one that was put into place in the 1800s is just moot?
Well, it's owned by one company, I guess. So there'll be no stopping. You know, if you want to get off in Wichita, too bad. It's just going to keep going.
From where to where? What are the endpoints?
From Norfolk Southern to Union Pacific.
Oh, where is that, though?
Exactly. So I don't know.
Well, thank you for that meaningful update.
TBD. Well, I don't think they're selling tickets just yet. So on the tariff front, we see that just a few days ago, the president made a big deal with Europe. He was out in Scotland opening a new golf course and settled on, what was it, a 15% tariff across the board with the EU?
That's right. So
his trading partner.
Right. So it's a 15% tariff on most EU products, including automobiles. It's good news because it is lower than the 30% rate that had been threatened by the White House. And it's in alignment with our deal with Japan. Notably, though, it is an increase from the current interim rate of 10%. So it's a little bit higher than we've been experiencing since April, but lower than threatened. In general, markets like this, not because they care about the specific rate, but because one, it isn't off the charts, and two, it now creates more certainty. That's the theme we keep going back to. Markets love certainty. So the fact that we've reached a deal, markets like that. The deal also includes the EU pledging to buy more U.S. liquid natural gas and defense equipment, mm-hmm. As well as making direct investments. Also, going back to our discussion on tariffs, what's on the table here. It's a lot more than just a tariff rate. So we're looking at the direct investment and pledges to make other types of spending decisions that benefit the United States. We are still having that question mark around pharma. So pharmaceuticals are actually the largest portion of imports from the EU, makes up about a fifth of our imports from the EU. And that's where the US is considering sectoral tariffs. So looking at specific market sectors, and those are yet to be negotiated.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult for any of those drugs that get hit by a tariff to make it over here. A lot of them, a good deal of them, are generics, which are the companies make, the foreign companies make, you know, a few pennies on. So they're, you know, they're trying to serve the different markets. Actually, in the U.S., 9 out of 10 drugs that are filled are generics. So we'll wait to see how that shakes out. You know, we'll just see how negotiations go, just because there's some things that are just not really possible to be sourced here. Well, the good news is that placebos are still very cheap and nobody knows the difference.
The Tic Tacs are really affordable. So.
Yeah, as long as we can get those, I think we'll be okay.
They okay.
seem to be pretty effective. So we've got a big plan that was released by the White House, the AI Action Plan, Cassie.
That's right.
The president is getting praise from places like the Washington Post.
Be right. Here's everyone who thinks I'm great. Here's a list in case you didn't know. I'm the best. These people say I'm the best.
There's a lot of gold stickers on here. The CEO of NVIDIA, Amazon, there you go. Max Headroom chimed in.
Well, of course, because the whole idea here is that, first of all, Trump is acknowledging the importance of AI for the future of this country. And he's, and his team, I should say, are thoughtfully putting together this action plan, a roadmap to say, all right, how do we, the United States, remain the leaders in AI? How do we fuel AI growth? How do we fuel AI expansion, development, take it to the next level, lead the future of AI in a way that is supported by the government? Yes, we're going to talk dollars. Jerry, you're going to give us that rundown. But in my opinion, more importantly, by not getting in the way of innovation, right? How do we take down barriers to let capitalism work and to let AI develop and grow without the government getting in the way?
That's one good thing the government tends to do, you know, whether it's nascent industries like the railroads or the internet, they usually get out of the way, let them grow and to see where it goes. Then they start slamming everybody with regulations.
But to get a piece of it.
Yes.
I'm cynical in that regard.
And it's tax it. Doesn't hurt. Never hurts to tax anything. But I think between all of the tech industries, as well as, you know, the industries that rely on tech, the consensus overwhelmingly is, you know, let it develop, let it flow where it's going. And, you know, there's a lot of questions right now. I think that people have, what is AI going to do? Where's it going to go? And, you know, how is it going to impact the economy? You know, if you're a truck driver, you're wondering about whether, you know, you're going to lose a job. If you shingle a roof, probably not. But, you know, there's a lot of, well, you know, white collar workers that might be concerned. And so it's a tense issue, but by laying the policy down now, the important thing is that we have a framework, because we're in a race with China, of course, and they are developing a lot of AI. And when you have smart chips and smart technology, someone said there's no prize for coming in second. So, right. You know, we have maintain the global leadership, and that is going to be, is really the driving force behind the plan.
Absolutely.
We don't know the actual person who wrote the plan.
Right. So it looks like credit is being given, at least as far as the introduction to the strategy goes, that it's being shared across the board with three individuals who wrote the introduction to help people break it down. Michael Kratsios, apologies if I'm mispronouncing your last name there, Michael. He's assistant to the president for science and technology. David Sachs, special advisor for AI and crypto, and Marco Rubio, who is our assistant to the president for national security affairs, just in case that name's not familiar.
You think anyone used ChatGPT for a little help?
Probably not ChatGTP, but maybe ChatGPT. Possibly, you know, AI can be a great tool for breaking things down to a simple level. I would not be shocked if it's in there.
GTP, you said. Well, this is important because it's really the first statement from any government body on AI. There's really no legislation that's, you know, been proposed, or there's no regulations that have been released. So this is actually kind of the first shot for a comprehensive framework on AI. And
so break it down for us, Jerry. What are we seeing here? What is the high level outline of this policy? What is the roadmap?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because the White House made it very clear that three pillars of the administration's framework center around, number one, accelerating AI innovation through deregulation. Pillar two, building American AI infrastructure. So we have a full capacity here at home for industry and consumer needs, and also to lead in international AI diplomacy and security. So there'll be national security elements tied to America's infrastructure framework. So what those specifically break down into, it's good to see the deregulation aspect of it, that there will be certain exclusions allowed for AI-related projects. Of course, we're going to need a lot of energy to power the very hungry chips and plants. So digging in more for your clients, that as you look at this, the government getting active on this policy, how does this affect maybe some of the recommendations that you provide?
Well, my clients and I, we've been talking about AI for a long time. And of course, it's not that we're saying, hey, go all in on AI. You should only be invested in AI. We're not hearkening back to the dot-com bubble of, oh, this company made some quote that included the words artificial intelligence. They must be an AI company. Let's throw money at them, right? We're certainly being much more strategic, working with a lot of portfolio managers that are considering that theme of AI investment and thinking very broadly about what it means to be part of the growth of AI. What I come back to in this discussion of AI is comparing it to that dot-com bubble. A lot of people are very nervous that that's what we're seeing now. It seems like too many companies are calling out AI. Even the largest companies in our economy are all emphasizing their investment AI as their biggest expense, the biggest thing that they are investing in internally. And so it can be scary to the everyday investor to say, whoa, whoa, why does everything seem to be AI? I remember that back when everything was .com and the internet, and yet we had this big bust. How is this different? Why is this different? And I had a really great session last week when I was down at a Raymond James Leadership Conference. It's called the Summer Development Conference. I went to a fantastic session that was led by a man named Dan Nichols. He's at Jennison Associates. He's a managing director there. He's part of managing several different portfolios, different strategies within Jennison. He did a fantastic session on growth trends in the market, and the largest one of those growth trends being artificial intelligence. And if I ever had any inclination to be scared of AI as the next dot-com bubble, he certainly dispelled any remaining doubts or reservations there. For example, what is this confidence that AI is an enduring theme, that it's an important area of growth for the market? Let's look very specifically at second quarter earnings results, driving all of these record highs that we talked about in the weekly roundup. Second quarter earning results, they're off to a really solid start. We're seeing a lot of companies outperforming their guidance, so doing even better in second quarter than they expected. And of those companies reporting results as they're doing it and providing commentary, they are reinforcing that their demand for AI is strong and growing. They are increasing their guidance for how much they expect to spend on AI because they're citing that they are capacity constrained, meaning they have more demand than they can provide when it comes to their AI tools, product, services. Alphabet is one example. So the parent company of Google. IBM is also citing a backlog of AI demand. ServiceNow, which may be your own company that you work for, or maybe some of your service providers are using like a help desk tools where most people know ServiceNow. Same thing. They're saying, hey, AI has this backed up demand and we can't provide our AI tools fast enough. So Microsoft, Meta, Apple, Amazon, we are expecting similar commentary from all of those companies as they're reporting their earnings. And that's showing us that AI is not just this lofty promise, but that it's delivering actual earnings results. God, sorry. I'll go off on my soapbox there for AI.
Oh, no, that's good. You have a lot of companies, like some of the tech companies that you were mentioning, they're obviously directly involved in AI. But then there's also the, downstream where, you're looking at how companies are utilizing it. If you look at retail or financial services or manufacturing, those companies are all going to, or those, industries are all going to be seeing who is, maximizing their resources. And, you had a dot-com bubble too, where you had people throwing money at just something on the, idea that it might,
it might take off, right?
Yes. And so there were a lot of really bad ideas out there that no longer around. But with AI, I think what you've got and why a bubble is much more unlikely is that their business plans or their objectives and their strategies are fairly set and fairly steady. And it is exactly how AI is going to be used to further goals that are already part of the company's agenda. So,
right. So in this case, the companies that we're looking at for AI investment, they have very clear products and services. The ones who themselves are the AI providers. So we're talking software firms or chip makers. It's also very clear, again, where the earnings come from. You've got a solid product or service. We know exactly how it generates revenue, what the expenses are, and how those trickle down to earnings, especially earnings that eventually get returned to the investor, either in share price appreciation or someday in the form of dividends, because many of these are not dividend payers or small dividend payers. So yes, you can invest in those direct companies who are providing the AI solutions. Mm. Examples of that, the big names we just talked about, Microsoft, Google, Alphabet, Amazon, Meta, NVIDIA. Then we can also think about the broader environment. All right, beyond those companies that are creating the AI tech, who else benefits from the growth of AI and this next step in the evolution of our economy? Because yes, AI is the future of our economy. We talk about cybersecurity firms, IT security firms. They're in even higher demand as AI grows and develops. Educational technology, workforce development, because there's going to be a large retraining of the workforce again as we evolve the way they interact with AI to support the work that they're doing. We're also looking at, of course, the semiconductor manufacturers, but we're thinking about energy providers. We're thinking about utilities, because in order to serve all of these AI solutions, we need large data centers. They have high computing power. They need lots of energy for that computing power. They need lots of energy for cooling those data centers because servers run hot. And as part of that cooling, you need lots of water. People don't think about the fact that where does the cooling come from? A lot of it's done with water. So we're even thinking about the utility companies that are supporting those data centers. So lots of AI thematic investing happening beyond just the big tech names that you're used to looking to.
Yeah, at an administration, kind of a boring angle, handling lots of data, handling records, all of our records, from whether they're our health records or whether they're down at the DMV or the IRS, they're going to be, AI is going to be handling all that stuff now, which is going to be interesting.
Well, you bring up a good point with the data, Jerry, is that that's another winner of this AI next generation, is the people who own massive data. The companies that have been prioritizing data collection, data mining to understand their customers, they are going to be a big winner in AI. Again, looking at these, if you've heard the term large language models, right? All the data that we feed in to teach AI how to respond and generate information, it's based on having data to feed it, to teach it. And so any of these owners of massive data sets are going to be part of driving the future, and they're going to be some of the big winners when it comes to AI investment.
So did everybody come out of the talk feeling good about it? Did you guys get a t-shirt or anything?
Well, and it wasn't just about AI. We also talked about some other growth themes, like in terms of, you know, immunology. That's another area that's, you know, facing a lot of growth. So we weren't we weren't only talking about AI. But one of the pieces of data, again, thinking about, is AI really the future? Is this just a bubble? Is this just something popular that people like talking about? One of the data points that was cited by Dan that I discovered was actually taken from the World of Statistics. It was reported heavily across many publications, including the Economic Times back in 2023. So this is not new data. The telephone, the adoption period for the original telephone in order to reach 100 million users took 75 years. Cell phone adoption for 100 million users took 16 years. Internet adoption, so from the beginning of the launch of the World Wide Web in 91 to reach 100 million users took 7 years. AI adoption in order for ChatGPT specifically to reach 100 million users took 2 months. So it shows us that step change in how the internet enabled us to speed up adoption of new technologies, including AI itself, which is just exponentially faster. And AI itself is then going to allow us to enhance adoption of new technologies and ways of doing things all the more exponentially. So this really is a step change in human and economic development, the way that we process, use, and share information. It's staggering.
And I think one of the reasons that the adoption was so quick was because the infrastructure was already there.
Right.
With phones and cell phones and modems.
Launching point for the next. The original telephone was inspiration and, in a way, a launching point for the cell phone. You know, an internet is that for AI.
Right. There's no, what do you call it? What was it called? An iPod? Sorry. There's no widget you have to get for, you know, to get for AI. It's already around us. And well, you made me feel better about that, Cassie. I wish there was a fourth pillar about AI not rising up and enslaving us, but maybe that'll come on the next round. But well, I think that's great information. And did you have any parting words or thoughts that you'd like to share?
Well, my other fun fact, just so I can offer some fun facts along the way. I guess it's not exactly a fun fact, because I'm not going to throw some statistics at you. But one last parting thing about AI. If I haven't sold you enough yet that this is enduring, this is not just some popular trend that we'll be
regretting. Is it going to replace juries? You know, it could replace juries. You just have a guy up there, give a story, and then you just look at AI and go, come on.
Guilty or not guilty. God forbid. I hope and trust that will not be the case.
It would probably be more accurate, though.
No, just looking at the need for AI, the importance of AI, again, thinking economically, is that you would not be shocked to learn that we have negative population trends here in the U.S., that we are not replacing ourselves when it comes to the birth rate. You would probably also not be shocked to know that our real GDP growth is declining and has been for decades. And so when we look at that trend, we cannot reverse real GDP growth by increasing the population and saying, hey, now we have new workers who are increasing the productivity of this country because people aren't having babies, right? That would help, but they're not. My husband and I, Bobby and I, we're doing our part. We're trying to get more babies into the US, but we're not closing that gap. That's just the actual population trend. And that's where the only way that we can get out of that real GDP growth slump is through innovation that will drive enhanced productivity. If you don't have more workers, you have to make the ones you have more productive. It's the only way you can get that enhanced growth. So that's what AI is doing for us. It is giving us that step change in productivity.
Very good point, because GDP growth is directly correlated to productivity. When workers become more efficient, when they have farm tools and other doodads, that's a big driver of GDP growth. And AI is a very powerful tool.
So that's why this is important. That's why the White House has said, all right, let's prioritize this. Let's not just watch these companies invest in it, but let's talk about why that is critical for our nation. And I'm loving this AI action plan. It's getting support across the aisle. My first career was tech. It will always hold a place in my heart. So I love seeing us rightfully take on our role as the leaders in AI worldwide.
Do you have a go-to AI app that you love?
Well, internally, we're using Microsoft Copilot. That's what we have approved for use. Again, you won't be shocked to find out that the financial services industry is highly regulated. So we have Copilot that's been cleared for us to use for internal generation. So that's my go-to.
We've come a long way from Clippy, haven't we?
Yes. I remember him dancing on the side of my screen.
And trying to X him out, and he kept dancing out
he
of the way.
He just kept going. Yeah.
It's like I couldn't write a paper without him or something. Come on.
Right.
But now Copilot's there, whether you want it or not. And now the search bars are really just basically white papers. So we'll see where it's going to go.
It's certainly helping my productivity. I have an AI add-in for Zoom that I use for client meetings with their permission, of course. And it summarizes our conversation for us. I still have to do some editing. It gets a couple things wrong. But it's great. It takes the time to produce summaries for my clients from an hour for a very thorough summary down to maybe 15 minutes. Really
What's helpful. Amazing to me is that a couple of weeks ago when you missed that podcast, I used the AI voice and nobody could tell the difference.
Oh, fantastic. Great. Yes. Great. So glad to know AI Cassie is pulling her weight.
She was doing great. She was a little skewed negative again, but I just, you just adjust the knob on the side. Mm-hmm. But Cassie, thanks so much for the great information and look forward to our next chat on the Capital Assets Podcast.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great day. Raymond James & Associates, Inc., member New York Stock Exchange, SIPC. The foregoing information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but we do not guarantee that it is accurate or complete. It is not a statement of all available data necessary for making an investment decision, and it does not constitute a recommendation. Any opinions are those of Cassie Pansenbeck and Jerry Simica, and not necessarily those of Raymond James. You should discuss any tax or legal matters with the appropriate professional. Raymond James is not affiliated with and does not endorse the opinions or services of Consumer Action for a Strong Economy.